accession number 32507, reel 3.
So I brought the reel 3. So Sam, what was the treatment and how did that pan out from that stage?
There wasn't really much treatment to do. Like, I went and saw an ENT specialist, and he basically just did a few tests of like vibrations and that, and to see which ear I could hear out of and not hear out of. But on the whole, that's really it. I mean, they didn't really do much, to tell the truth, which I think is a bit shocking.
Was there anything they could have done at that stage, or were they just...
I don't really know, because I'm not a medical professional, but from my point of view, I got there on a Saturday, got put in the furthest ward down, shoved in a corner, and yeah, you get people come around to give you medication, but that's it.
And with that, how's it healed over the time?
I've had a few dramas with it. Like, when they sewed up the first time, they didn't do a good job because I had a little pit in it, so I had to have Z-type plasty. That was where they cut the back of my ear open, took all the scar tissue away, and basically sewed it back up. And now I've got a tinnitus as well.
So, is that potentially permanent?
Yeah, it's permanent. So it's not really what you want at 21 years old.
Other than that, were you able to get yourself back together?
Yeah, I had my mum up there every single day, so which was good. But unfortunately, I weren't able to bring my girlfriend at the time up either, because apparently she wasn't family, so...
So you're not allowed to visit, you weren't allowed non-family visitors?
Yeah. The army wouldn't pay for her to come up, because the army brought my mum up by transport here, and my girlfriend lived 2 minutes down the road. But yeah, they wouldn't bring her up.
So how do you feel about the treatment you were receiving at that stage?
Bastion was right, Elizabeth was shocking, and really was shocking.
How long were you there?
I got discharged on Wednesday, so about a week, something like that.
And what was the next stage for you, obviously?
Had 3 weeks off, courtesy of the HQ Sub Major at the time. And once those 3 weeks had passed, I come back here, and basically got ready to get on the mend.
And what did you do, what was the process again?
I basically got my fitness back up. Obviously over time my eardrum healed and my balance got a hell of a lot better. So I've had a few hearing tests as well. So that's about it.
Was it hard with your balance at first?
Yeah, because I aimed to walk in a straight line to be like I was drunk, like just sway from side to side. So I'd like be more over to the left and like stumble over to the right.
So you were essentially back at Purbeck while they were still, there's a tour still going on?
Yeah, I stayed in Purbeck for about 2 months. And got my back, got myself fully fit again and went back out there.
You went back out?
Yeah.
So how long was the tour? How long was the tour was left when you got out?
2 months.
So how did you get back out again?
I did my hearing test. Like someone told me it's about 3.5 seconds, so I've done it 3.5 seconds. I got an average, but at the time my hearing was a hell of a lot better. So I just wanted to get back out there for the blokes. Because when you're working out there, you've got quite a close family. And you think, when you're back here, you think, I really am jacking on them. So you just want to get out there and do it again.
Was that quite hard being back on your own, in a sense, again? And you want to get back and you say, be back to blocks?
Yeah, it was, because you had like new blokes coming in and they'd be quite gobby. And you think, shut up, you don't know what you're on about, sort of thing. Just feel like putting them in their place.
Is there a difference, obviously, when you've experienced being in action, in your outlook to kind of soldiering in the profession, as you say, with new people coming in, is there a difference?
Yeah, there is, because I think there is anyway, because those of us who went to Afghan and did have firefights and that, you don't take life for granted, so to speak, but new blokes come in and are so gobby and think they're all that. And you think, you don't know a thing. You don't, like, experience half of what blokes in camp have.
So, what happened when you got back?
Went back to 9 platoon, which was the platoon I was in, and they were in Malzaz. Just staggering on, really. And the first thing I got from one of the blokes was, right, Frankie, you're half tall. So, not exactly the sort of welcome I was expecting, but...
Yeah. Is that jewelry or banter?
A bit of both, I think.
So you go back to Nelson. What was Nelson like?
That was basically like just quite a big compound. Had your ops room in the middle, had sentry posts on each corner. Our accommodation was like an old jailhouse, which was actually quite good accommodation. But the only thing is, there's like loads of stray cats and dogs outside. Like be on the stag, like. To see loads of stray dogs like having scraps of each other, which actually was quite entertaining. So we actually had nicknames for them as well.
And where is it located?
It's located in Nowzad, DC, like the centre of it.
And are there many civilians around it?
There was none of what I saw anyway.
What was the situation with the Taliban while you were there? Were they able to attack or were they?
They were quite able to attack because they were only like part of KOA. And if they knew that there was only a platoon in there, then I think they would have had a cheeky little go at us. But we got told there was about 100 of them. So that was like their little time off sort of break. That's what we got told anyway.
Could they approach the compound through the town?
Yeah, they could because the main gates, there's like alleyways going straight down, and in Sanger 2, it's quite high up, there's like, we call it RPG Alley. There's obviously quite a lot of blokes walking out there, RPGs and that, and trying to pop one off at you.
And is that just, is it sort of like a harassing fire that will do? It will just pop out fire, disappear, or would they actually organise it?
That's like just basically have a pop shot. We did actually have a sniper, but it wasn't particularly that good, like on Sanger 4.
Why you say it wasn't particularly good?
You missed every single time.
And with each of the Sangers, what have they got inside them?
It's basically just Hesco, Basco around the outside with a corrugated iron roof. That's basically it, really, with four slits and the doorway at the back.
Do they offer much protection?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I mean, Hesco Basco is quite strong, really. That'll stop one RPG and go through it.
And were you patrolling from there?
No, we didn't do no patrols because of the manpower we had there. We only had like one platoon.
So, was it relatively quiet, obviously, from what you'd experienced in Kajaki?
Yeah, when I was there, when we had. We got opened up on twice. That was it. And that was plus one shot each time.
Were they based in the town or were they further out?
I think they were probably a bit further out.
So with the Nowzad, were you there until the end of the tour?
No, our platoon was there for about 5 weeks and then we moved to Inkerman.
So was it a relatively quiet period while you were at the
Nowzad? Yeah, it was, yeah.
How did that change when you got to Inkerman?
Changed, just like the complete opposite, really.
Can you describe some of the location of Inkerman and again what the camp is like?
Yeah, that's pretty much like a dust ball in the middle of it. Like walk across it in shorts and out, your legs would just be dust. My living quarters are right next to the outside wall, which is probably about 2 foot thick with loads of cracks in it, which didn't really make me feel good. Had Hesco around the outside as well with a camnet and in the bit next to us we had a volleyball court, which was the only time I could play a bit of volleyball. Two sand positions at the front on either corner, and yeah, and they would man the back ones. So and we had a HLS at the back as well.
And where's its location? You mentioned it was a dust bowl, but where's the?
Just north of Sangen, so about 2 mile up the road from Sangen, something like that.
How close is it to the green zone?
About a stone's throw. So, pretty close.
How often did you come under attack from while you were in the Inkerman?
Well, I was in the compound about two or three, but when we're doing patrols every single day, pretty much two out of three times you get opened up on, which was quite bad really, because once you're in the green zone, you don't know where they're going to hit you from.
With the camp first, was there, what were the type of attacks that you got on the camp?
107 and RPG, a little bit small arms.
What kind of damage did they do?
I was quite lucky really, because I'd like either have it too high or too low and I'd hit the bank in front or I'd fly over the top. But we did have one hit the wall near our sleeping area, and that sent a bit of shrapnel back into our sleeping accommodation. I had a bit of shrapnel go through all my photos, my notebook, a bit of flying through my camera, and one of the blokes got a bit in the back of their neck as well. But the KRH lot, who were actually sleeping where it actually hit, got pretty messed up, because two of them did, so.
You were patrolling down into the green zone.
Yeah.
How were the patrols organised?
Basically, OC would like come up with a plan, like brief the platoon commanders up, platoon commanders brief the sergeant, section commanders up, then each section commander would brief his section up individually. And like just go out, like about three different routes we take every single time. Go out, do a patrol, lay out for a little bit, like sit in the middle of nowhere, just keeping your eyes open, and come back in camp, and they're more likely to open up when you're going in back in, because they know you'd be more tired and a little bit less switch on, and because the heat and just general fatigue of your own.
And if you're going out on a patrol, would you go out in a long column, or do you go out in sort of two columns? Or?
Basically like a single file, follow the leader sort of thing really, but when you get to open ground, you like have to run across it, obviously, due to safety reasons.
Were you still in the GPMG?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
So, with the patrol into the green zone, can you describe to me the green zone, what it's like inside the green zone?
It's like, some areas are like really boggy and marshy, like lots of crops spout up to head height, so when you're walking through them you can't really see what's in front of you. There were quite a lot of civilians around as well, because obviously it's like harvest and it's kind of that time of year anyway. Quite a lot of trees, a lot of drainage ditches for the fields.
So quite difficult terrain to operate on.
Yeah, can't really, especially when it comes up to the fields, you don't know what's going to be, if you're a lead man, you don't know what's 2 foot in front of you, so you could walk into a Taliban's face. So.
And how well do they use that terrain?
They use it really well, they use it to the best of their advantage, because obviously they know the area, they're like, set up in a ditch somewhere or in a house, and they know you're going to cross. Because I think after a while they got to know what ways we go in and out of camp, things like that. And the first patrol I went on again, we got ambushed.
Can you take me through, obviously, how that developed?
Yeah, there's a compound with quite a tall centre building, and we were walking past that, must have been about, I'd say 300 metres, something like that. Just walk past a single column, one platoon got past it, and as my platoon was going past, they opened up dead in the middle of us, so it like split us in half, so to speak. But thank God I was behind a building as they opened up one, so.
Does the building offer you some protection when they do that?
Yeah. That does, because we had about 20 blokes behind one building, because that was the only cover available, but other blokes were stuck in the middle of the field, just seeing poppy rounds, or poppy heads explode next to them where the bullets hit them.
And could you identify where they were firing from?
No, you couldn't really have a chance, because they got the upper hand on you, because you're on the back foot. They can basically do what they want to do, and we had to get the Vikings in, which is like an armed vehicle with 50 cal on top, to come give us support while we had to go out. Because as soon as they rock up, they piss off, basically.
So is their tactics, are they really just a shoot and scoot and disappear away?
They were in Kijaki, but Inkermann actually stayed before. It was like with the Taliban, you got like tier one, tier two, tier three. Tier three is like low level, like what we had in Kijaki, and tier one's obviously step and fight till death sort of thing.
Is there a difference? Is there a difference in their sort of origins and where they come from and how they operate between the tier one and tier threes?
I don't think it's. I think it's just down to guts, really, to tell you the truth. So
when the Vikings appeared, and then did they all run up in obviously where the Taliban were firing?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And did it cease instantly?
Yeah, it did.
So do you then continue on with the patrol?
Yeah, you do. Well, we were on our way back in the camp then, so we just carried on with the patrol as we normally do.
So when these engagements happen, it happens. You're unable to see usually where the enemy are.
Yeah.
And does it happen very, very quickly with a lot of firepower, or is it pot shots and gradually?
I normally open up with a huge burst and like gradually decrease it like we would. But they're getting to a point where they used to tie AK-47s to a tree and have a trigger on a bit of string, build a string. So you'd think that'd be one place you go to and maybe somewhere else.
So they'd essentially, would they have set up lines of fire when you guys were likely to be?
Yeah.
And then,
because people think they're dumb, but they're far from it.
What's your opinion of their skills and their tactics?
I think their skills and drills are quite good for the, for where they come from now. I mean, what, you're fighting someone who hasn't been defeated in ages, like the French couldn't do it.
So. And how do you think you guys perform against them?
I think overall we did a bloody good job, so.
And you mentioned your first patrol in there.
Yeah.
Can you give me another example of what other contacts that you had on other patrols?
No, not really. I think most of it I've actually forgotten about, if that's the truth.
So a lot of the time, basically, when you're patrolling, it's just that they would open up on you and you would engage.
Yeah.
At that point. Did you use, while you were down in Kabul, was there air support?
Yes, it was when we actually moved out of England for about 3 days and went up about 2 hours up the road and up near Putang, places like that. Did a couple of patrols out, and on our last day we had a 107 rocket come through our platoon wall and actually went through one of the section's rooms, hit the door frame and exploded in the corridor. But the only casualties we had really was one bloke got a glass in his cheek, another one had bits of shrapnel in his back, but as a whole no one really got severely injured from that. I don't know how.
How did you make
it
when you got
there? We got in the back of Mastiffs and went up there. Mainly Mastiffs went up there with us.
What's a Mastiff?
It's basically like a big armored truck, really, 50 cal on it. I had a look at one of them that went over a 3-stacked mine. All it done was just blew the wheel off and just bent the axle.
So it offers quite a lot of protection for mines, isn't it?
Yeah, stopped. One of them had got hit by 107. I just put a small hole in it because I got RPG cages up as well, which I meant to catch the RPG before it detonates.
So you're fairly safe moving around in the Mastiff?
Yeah, I'd rather move around when one of them are on foot. So
you got there for 3 days. Was it a 3-day patrol or patrolling from that point?
Went out there for 3 days and did like one patrol a day sort of thing.
How stressful is it, obviously, when you're patrolling? Are you constantly having to be switched on all that time that you're out?
Yeah, you've got to be switched on like 24/7, because if you switch off 1 minute, that minute could be the time that something happens and like risk yourself and your mates around you.
And is that fatiguing?
Yeah, it is. I mean, like at some points we'll be going up at 3 o'clock in the morning, not getting back till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I think it's what, 12-hour patrol, and especially at mid-heat as well.
Are you getting any time off after a patrol?
Yeah, you basically have like, from the time you get in is till the next patrol is time, basically your time.
And what was the kind of, you know, divisions of the patrol? Would it be the next day or?
That would be the next day, because RSC wanted to keep the pressure up, so we'd be going out every single day. I think Warren Ingerman, we didn't have one day off.
And with Ingerman, did you feel that you were forcing the Taliban back, or were they infiltrating again?
I think it was a bit of a stalemate, to tell you the truth. So, like, we'd go out, push them back, and then they'd move up again. So, really, you know, not winning, you're not losing.
Was the experience of Ingerman more intense than the period of the Jackie, although you were wounded at the Jackie?
I'd say the fighting was a lot more intense, because you were fighting more determined enemy. But I think it actually has its bad points as well.
And was... did you enjoy touring Ingerman?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
So what do you feel now about having been over in Africa?
I don't know, it's a weird experience to describe, to say the truth. Like I say, unless you haven't done it, you can't really know what it's like, sort of thing. But that has been one of the best times in my life, I've got to say. One of the most memorable as well.